This is Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
The COVID-19 pandemic and how Cuba shows that international solidarity is the answer.
Another early morning, another ceremony to bid health workers farewell. Last week, a troop of Cuban doctors were dispatched to Italy. This week, medical professionals have been sent throughout the Caribbean to Suriname, Grenada, Jamaica, and today, St. Kitts and Nevis. 29,000 Cuban doctors and nurses are working in 59 countries around the world. And as confirmed cases of coronavirus increase, so does demand for Cuban medics. Medical services are the island's main export, raising more than $6 billion for the state in 2018. But the communist-ruled island doesn't charge for the thousands of doctors who work in more than a dozen low-income countries in Latin America and Africa. The same goes for disaster relief, where Cuban physicians have provided emergency assistance to millions. Almost 1,000 Cuban doctors arrived in Haiti after the 2010 earthquake, where they were the first to set up medical facilities amid the rubble.
More than 12,000 people were willing to fight Ebola, and right now there are thousands of Cubans willing to complete these missions.
While Western commentators assume Cuba sends doctors mainly to expand influence, experts on the island's health system draw a different conclusion.
The root of it, in addition to Cuba's own health system, which provides universal coverage and universal access, is really the belief that Cuba is one of a number of developing countries that is trying to make life better for its population.
From the moment we're born in this country, we receive an education based on humane principles. The principle of solidarity and internationalism is at the forefront of that. This isn't about politics or ideology, it's about humanity.
You're making a big sacrifice. Why are you willing to go?
Because there are other people that need me, people that are sick and dying, and that isn't right. People shouldn't be dying when there are people who can help them.
Ed Augustin, Al Jazeera, Havana.
Putting human needs ahead of profits in the fight against the coronavirus. We're joined by Dr. John Kirk, professor at Dalhousie University, Halifax, Nova Scotia, author of Healthcare Without Borders, and the world's leading authority on Cuban medical internationalism. Recently featured on PBS, Nova's program, Cuba's Cancer Hope. Dr. Kirk, first of all, of course, thank you very, very much for joining us. And by the way, since we're talking to you from Canada, I can't help but ask, how are things doing up there in response to and referencing the coronavirus?
We started quite a while ago, and I think we've been very lucky, but the fact that it's such a big country and there's so much space. So fortunately, we're not doing too badly.
I can't help but ask, in reference to the incompetencies and force of our own national administration here, how do you feel the protocols in general are being handled through your prime minister in Canada?
I think exceptionally well. I'm not a particularly strong fan of his, but I think that the amount of education that's been provided, the financial support that's been given to people who are not at work, these are grants, they're not loans. The daily information and question and answer with honest questions and answers, the use of the media, listening to science above all, and following the doctors, the stars of the Canadian campaign against coronavirus are the provincial ministers of health, so everyone listens to the science here.
Since we're really, that's what I was hoping that you were going to be saying, and I think that is the most appropriate by far in the world community, and you've done a great deal of study and research and posit yourself as, if I can, an internationalist in the area of science and health, etc., which has caused you to spend a good deal of time looking at the Cuban healthcare system. And I wonder if you can give us some of your elementary feelings and concerns about what you have uncovered or interests you and you think is affirmative about Cuba's healthcare system.
I've been traveling to Cuba since 1976 as a graduate student then and since then writing a number of books on Cuba. The international relations of Cuba have always interested me, and about 15 years ago when I was writing a book on Cuban foreign relations, I kept bumping into doctors and nurses and technicians who'd been working on international missions. Through them, I got an understanding of the international mission, the medical internationalism, but also the way the Cuban system works for Cubans. My daughter, who studied at the University of Havana, was a patient in hospital, so I got to see that firsthand. The Cuban system is free. It's accessible. It has better results in many ways than those found in Canada and the U.S., It is available to everybody, and I think the fact that it's free, the fact that Cuba produces 60% of its own medicines mean that medicines are remarkably cheap. The essence of the Cuban healthcare system is prevention. We in the global north, we depend upon a curative system. We go and see a doctor to get a prescription when we get sick. The Cubans do just the opposite. Because they have three times as many doctors per capita as Canada, let me repeat that, three times as many, and the same is true of the United States, and of course the system in Cuba is free and it's public. What that means is that medical conditions are nipped in the bud before they become major problems. So I think the fact that the preventive philosophy and the fact that the accessibility of Cuba, wherever you live on the island, it's free and it is available to all.
And now let's just turn for a moment to the international realm with Cuba, because certainly it's my knowledge that there are nearly 50,000, and I learned this from your own writings, et cetera, 50,000 medical personnel working on solitary missions in over 66 countries, and it is pointed out that this is more than all of the G7 countries combined, and also more than the World Health Organization. So what's the significance of that, and particularly, if you will, in the time when you would think and hope that the fight back against the coronavirus would and has to be an international endeavor?
Let me begin by giving you an update on the figures. The figures were true 5 years ago, 4 years ago. Since then, the governments of Bolivia, there was a constitutional coup in Bolivia. In Ecuador, where a right-wing government took power, and especially Brazil, where a guy called Bolsonaro is the president, and is remarkably, he prides himself on being the Trump of the tropics. 10,000 Cuban doctors basically left. Well, there were 10,000 there. About 8% remained in Brazil, and the rest left. So now, I think a more updated figure would be 29,000 Cuban medical personnel working in 59 countries. This is before the coronavirus. I agree with you completely that this is a planet-wide pandemic where countries from around the globe should be working together. And I think that if you look at the industrialized countries, nobody is doing anything. Everybody is hunkering down. A West-first or a North-first philosophy is permeating everything. In fact, some of the Trump administration's actions in trying to commandeer medical equipment that could be used elsewhere, I find quite embarrassing. I'm sure you've heard about the equipment that was supposed to go to the West German police. That I think it was in Thailand, where the Trump administration insisted that it come back to the United States. So the commandeering of medical supplies, the me first philosophy, which is the result of massive fear, understandable fear, but we're doing the wrong thing. And I think that we need to think as a planet. And I find it embarrassing that a country as small as Cuba, 11.2 million people, is doing something which no of the wealthier countries is doing. I find that's embarrassing.
Well, maybe then we should just turn to a moment to the issue of the philosophic underpinnings of human rights, et cetera, and the provision of health services that the Cuban government has instituted both at home and abroad to help us understand how that can be differentiated from certainly the role of the United States and what you've already pointed out, Mr. Trump.
It's quite astonishing if you look at what Cuba has done in terms of international medical health. It's based upon the same principles that permeate the Cuban awareness. from preschool education right up to university. The idea of working for the collective is the most important ethos that exists. For my research, I interviewed 270 doctors, nurses, technicians from who'd been around the world. And what was interesting, when I interviewed them, none of these people said that they had been dragooned into going. They went because, well, it was the right thing to do. The humanity is one country. And basically, if you think that we in Cuba are having economic problems, you used to see what it's like in Gambia or Niger or Rwanda. The Cubans have used that made in Cuba philosophy, which I would argue probably stems from Fidel Castro's obsession with public health as the most important human right. Cuba has done some remarkable things. It's just recently we saw the anniversary of the Chernobyl meltdown in the Ukraine. What most people don't realize is that 25,000 kids, accompanied by a guardian, came to Cuba for medical treatment for free. Free accommodation, free food, free medical training between 1989 and 2011. Most people don't realize that this tiny country of 11.2 million has provided eye surgery for over 3 million people, mainly in Latin America and the Caribbean, under what's called Operation Miracle. Most people don't realize as well that Cuba's got the largest medical school in the world, the Latin American Medical School. The acronym is ELAM, which has graduated 30,000 doctors for free for the developing world. 200 Americans, by the way, have graduated from ELAM. It's quite astonishing, but this all sort of results from the idea of we don't give our leftovers, we share what we have. And Cuba's got a lot. Again, Cuba's got three times per capita the number of doctors. There are 95,000 physicians in Cuba. In Canada, there are about 88,000. But our country is wealthy and three times the size of the population. So I would argue that what you say is very true, that Cuba is using the basic philosophy found in its own healthcare, provide medical care abroad. And they do not charge the patients for the medical care. This is provided free. So the idea of free, accessible, preventive care is the ethos of the Cuban healthcare model, both in Cuba and abroad.
And the stunning capability that seems to be evidenced from the Cuban healthcare system and the medical inventions, if you will, or trials and testings and availability to people. I wonder if you can talk some about that. And I have to just disclose that myself, I was a product of the Cuban healthcare system, having been in an accident in Cuba and witnessed firsthand the extraordinary stitching ability of my body back to good health as a result of a rather grievous accident that occurred there. So say I was in a kind of wondrous position both as to the actual capabilities and just the ambiance, if you will, of the treatment, which was a kind of collective process of citizenry also attending to and having free access to their loved ones who might have been hospitalized. So I wonder if you can just pick up on that, sir.
Well, I think the fact that Cuba produces nearly 60% of its own medicines means that there are many drugs that are available that are very, very cheap. My own daughter, I was visiting her in Havana when she was studying. We were at a Canadian diplomat's house. His wife had made this curry dish, and there were some ground nuts in it. My daughter is deathly allergic to nuts, and in the end, we had to rush her to hospital. As soon as we got in, I explained. Her throat was closing up. I explained. I said that what she had, and right away, she was given an EpiPen. She was given Benadryl, was given dextrose, and was given some pills to calm her. And I came back with the bill, which I took to Blue Cross, which I still have, the three medicines. And if you've ever bought an EpiPen in North America, you know how expensive they are. Here, the bill was 75 cents, 50 cents, and 50 cents. We had to pay $30 for the doctor's visit because she was a Canadian. And I took it to Blue Cross to get paid, and they sort of said, well, this is a wrong, bad translation of the bill. And I said, no, I'm bilingual, and this is what it cost. how can it be? And I said, well, it can be because they produce their own medicines. So I agree with you, and I had a similar experience, and many of my students who studied in Cuba likewise. In terms of the training of Cuban doctors and the training of people from abroad who train at ELAM, the medical school I mentioned earlier, first of all, there's no charge for anyone to go to university in Cuba. It's free, including medical degrees. Students who study at ELAM, their education is free, unless they come from countries which can afford it, in which case there is a sliding scale. But it's still significantly cheaper than what someone would pay in an industrialized society. The Cuban doctors come from regular backgrounds. They don't have to be from wealthy middle-class families with large incomes to support the ridiculously high tuition to become a doctor. They are socialized from preschool to believe that they have to work as a collective. I'm number one doesn't apply. Being number two and number three, that's pretty good too. So you work as a collective. You work for the benefit of humanity. My PhD thesis was on a guy called Jose Martí, who was the inspiration for the Cuban Revolution. And there's a famous quotation from his, three words, patria es humanidad. All of humanity is our country. I would believe that under Fidel Castro, that became put into practice.
One of the things is that Mr. Trump has taken to professing some kind of medical wisdom and knowledge and also some scientific acumen. It is absolutely a mad clown situation. But he's been toting hydroxychloroquine, Quinn, as the major in medical drug. But in the meantime, there actually is a drug that has been developed by China and Cuba, and it's actually used internationally, and that is in response to the coronavirus risk, COVID-19. I wonder if you can talk about their prowess and the capabilities in that area and why we should be looking at, certainly in countries like ours, which continue to embargo Cuba to sanction it and deprive our populace of the incredible competencies, some of which you've already described, of this remarkable medical system.
First of all, if I were an American, I think I'd listen more to the science of Dr. Fauci than I would to the hunches of President Trump. I think that
you're being all too kind describing them as hunches.
The Cubans have got a remarkable science city outside Havana, where there are 20 to 22,000 scientists work together collaboratively in a number of scientific institutions. Recently, PBS television had a documentary on one of them, a so-called wonder drug called Cimavax, which is a lung cancer vaccine. It doesn't cure lung cancer, but it has been shown to prolong life. And as you will know, in Buffalo, there are tests going on to test the viability of it. In terms of the coronavirus, there is an interferon alpha-2B, which is being used as one of the drugs. And this goes back, basically it was invented discovered in the 1980s, but it's been used by the Cubans for a variety of other diseases. And it is one of a group of medicines which together can help to weaken the impact of the coronavirus. This isn't a cure, but it's one of several drugs. Another drug which I've seen used is called Hepaprot. Hepaprot P is used for people who have diabetes, and it is used for people who have very bad cases of diabetes. And in Cuba, it has reduced the amount of amputation by 80%. These are drugs which, under President Obama, Cimavax was given a chance to prove itself and is being examined and analyzed. But Cuba's got a wealth of drugs. It's got, again, 22,000 scientists working in a modern science city. It's like Silicon Valley for biotechnology. And the Cubans, if the embargo did not exist, could provide medicines that would be extremely useful for Americans. And it is unfortunate that the policy of the Trump administration to demonize the current government of Cuba makes this impossible. But you will have seen that not only do they demonize the Cubans, not only is the embargo in place, even despite the fact that the WHO and the UN Secretary General have both asked the United States to drop the embargo of Syria, of Cuba, and of Venezuela, these embargoes continue. They have a detrimental effect on the health of the Cuban population. You may also have seen that Alibaba, the owner, had tried to send some medicines to Cuba last week. Those medicines never reached Cuba because of fear of offending the U.S. government and breaking the American law. So, unfortunately, U.S. law is not only stopping the regular embargo problems facing Cuba, but is also aggravating the healthcare of Cuba. And this I find appalling, given what Cuba is trying to do for 16 countries in the planet at the moment.
I wonder if you could comment on other protocols that may have been put in place, if you're aware of them, relevant to the COVID-19 virus on the island itself. Because one of my understandings, which I thought was quite interesting, is that actually people stayed in place but were visited by healthcare professionals.
Cuba has got a remarkable record when it comes to dealing with natural disasters. Hurricanes are a major problem. You may recall when Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans, Cuba offered 1,400 medical specialists in emergency medicine, and 32 tons of medicine to help out the population of Louisiana. George W. Bush refused to even acknowledge what the Cubans were doing. It's unfortunate because Cuba's got a remarkable approach to dealing with natural disasters. They don't have much money, but they have an abundance of human capital. One of the things they did, precisely because of the current virus, was to send all third and fourth year medical students and nursing students door to door to check, and several of my friends in Havana have told me of the experience. They come to the door, they have their own sort of questionnaire. They ask, are there any people there over 60? Are the people there with health problems? Are the people there who are coughing? Are the people who have these symptoms? So basically, again, it's part of the emphasis on preventive medicine as opposed to curative medicine. The medical and nursing students go door to door. They fill out a profile of everybody who's in the house. Almost everybody in Cuba so far has been visited within 3 days. Those data are provided to the local polyclinic. The family doctors, and again, average family doctor in Cuba has about probably 1,200 patients under his or her care. They consult with the polyclinic and keep a very close watch on potential dangerous cases. And that's why if you look at the data for the current situation in Cuba, you'll see that every day the data are provided. As of today, there are 1,887 people who are in hospital. Of those, 129 have proven positive for the virus. There are 16,000 who are being watched at home, precisely through these medical students and the system. And 8 people have died. So 8 people in a population of 11 million have died.
And I'm still going back to, I remember in 1960 during the earthquake in Chile, and then you mentioned the Chernobyl disaster and the devastating 2010 earthquake in Haiti and the subsequent cholera outbreak. Cuba, its medical personnel, were there. The 2014 Ebola epidemic in West Africa, which of course the reason I'm saying this is not to pin a badge of courage of the Cuban system, but to acknowledge the incredible experience which should be brought to bear were we not dismissive or worse, condemnative of the politics and government of the country, rightly or wrongly so, but we are denying our own populaces access to this incredible wealth of experience and knowledge. And as we kind of conclude, why is this such an important thing, again, in the midst of the advent of the worldwide pandemic, the contagion of COVID-19. Why should we understand? Why should we open up to the Cuban healthcare system and certainly its philosophy, which goodness knows, poor Bernie Sanders was absolutely shredded from even suggesting had some merit when he was a candidate on the presidential stage.
Well, I think that for selfish reasons, Americans can benefit from having closer ties with Cuba. I would argue that Cuba's got a surplus of doctors and nurses. The United States could use them in the public health sector in underserved areas. In terms of medicines, Cuba's got a wealth of medical knowledge in terms that Americans could use. Again, 80%, there are 80% less amputations of limbs for diabetic patients than Cuba using a particular drug, and I'm sure that diabetic patients in the U.S. could gain from that. I think that we have a first world-centric view of public health care. We believe we have the answers. We contemptuously ignore what Cuba has done. We ignore the human capital that exists. And I hope that when all this settles, people realize that we have to work in a multilateral world, that the idea of me first and first world first is a concept which is outdated and dangerous. We are facing so many problems, and this is perhaps the most serious wake-up call that we have been faced so far. There should be an army of people, of doctors and nurses and technicians ready to deal with any medical emergency on the planet. The Cubans can do that. So the Cubans can be an insurance policy for the planet in terms of healthcare, if we have the political will. The Cubans can help us in terms of delivering healthcare, delivering a new model of healthcare. We have to step outside our first world superiority complex and be a little bit more humble.
Thank you so much for taking the time, and most critically, thank you for the work that you do and trying to open up the minds of our populace, which, oh my God, we're so bigoted and so backward. We have mountains to climb before we rest, but thank you for penetrating that terrible curtain of ignorancy and political reaction that is part of the American psyche and politic.
Yeah, glad to help. Keep safe, Mimi.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
We've been speaking with Dr. John Kirk, author of Healthcare Without Borders. And remember, end all economic and travel sanctions against Cuba. Lift the blockade.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.